You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband, let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray and you get a whole service.
How does it go?
IE7, you're having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
No, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb, in this, the iPhone Mania Week. At last, the iPhone has arrived, as Apple lovers globally revel in the birth of a 4.7-ounce bouncing baby telecommunications device, which is nothing like the world has ever seen before. According to Australian PC World, New Zealander Johnny Gladwell was the first customer anywhere in the world to purchase the iPhone 3G, gaining the nickname iPhone Johnny from tech bloggers. Brett Howe became the first Australian to own the iPhone when he managed to be the first in line at Optus's George Street store in Sydney. The store threw open its doors at midnight with an inventory of just 500 iPhones. Telstra opened its Sydney T-Life store at 6 a.m. and Vodafone's 7 a.m. George Street opening was decidedly smaller than the Optus event, despite the appearance by celebrity Lara Bingle. More than 6 million people bought the first generation iPhone after it was released in 2007. Since then, the number of countries selling the iPhone has expanded to 24, with a further 49 countries expected to begin selling the iPhone 3G in coming months. Apple has stated it expects to sell more than 10 million iPhones this year. But wait, there's something wrong in Australia. There's no iPhone for three. If one brand encapsulates young, trendy, hippie, plenty of disposable income generation wires, it has to be Hutchison's 3. Were they really overlooked when it came to a product that fits their market like an apple in a blender? In another leap forward in technology, Tech Talk Radio is now trialling its own chat page. In an effort to bring true interaction to live broadcasting, you can now interact with the panel and listeners in real time via our new Tech Talk Radio chat server. Simply join us live on the stream on Monday nights, open your web browser and type chat.techtalkradio.com.au into the address bar and say hello. All going well, it will become a prominent part of the show.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you've crawled out from under a rock, the iPhone is here. We'll take a look at what's on offer in Australia. Adam Turner joins us live in the studio to talk iPhone, TiVo and Foxtel IQ. Seagate launch a 1.5 terabyte hard drive. A woman was jailed for hiring an internet hitman. A new submarine cable to quadruple internet bandwidth. Telstra trials a speedier NextG and NASA to put its current fleet of shuttles out to pasture. First up though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Australia gripped by Apple fever as the iPhone is launched locally. A woman is jailed for hiring an internet hitman. The founder of online Facebook game Scrabulous vows to fight on. Google explores alternate realities with Lively. And cosmonauts remove an explosive bolt from their Soyuz space capsule. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Well, at last the wait is over as Apple's iPhone 3G went on sale in Australia on Friday last week. The part iPod, part phone, part PDA went on sale without much of the fanfare that surrounded the opening of Sydney's Apple store last month. But the cold weather didn't deter many diehard Apple fans who queued outside retailers for nearly 12 hours prior to outlets opening on Friday morning. In Sydney, fanatics queuing outside the city's Optus store were kept warm in the lead-up to midnight as staff served free coffee, snacks, scarves, pizza and even massages. In Melbourne, rainy weather and temperatures below 3 degrees didn't deter Apple enthusiasts who queued at Telstra T-Life stores and Optus and Vodafone outlets. Optus, Vodafone and Telstra announced their iPhone 3G pricing plans last week, and all have been criticised for being too expensive and not offering a sufficient data quota for comfortable internet browsing. Telstra's Chief Financial Officer, David Moffat.
This will suit a lot of customers, and people are very excited about this. But really, customers really should ask the question, what do they most need their phone to do?
Staff at Telstra, Optus and Vodafone stores have told customers to expect the iPhone to be in extremely short supply, at least in the short term. An Irish woman has been found guilty of using the internet to hire a hitman to kill her partner and his family. Sharon Collins, 45, a divorced mother of two, tried to hire a hitman from the now-defunct US website hitman.us.com to kill her partner, an Irish property tycoon, and his two sons. The court heard that Collins was so confident of killing her partner that she went online and procured a marriage certificate from another website, proxymarriage.com, for $1,000, and used it to get an Irish passport in an alias name. In a confusing turn of events, the hitman allegedly flew to Ireland, burgled the husband's offices, and alerted one of the sons to the plan. Police arrested the alleged hitman and then arrested Collins. Collins was found guilty last week of conspiracy to kill and will be sentenced in October. Developers of a highly popular Facebook game, Scrabulous, have refused to bow to pressure from Scrabble over the legal status of their online word game. And games creator Electronic Arts has added fuel to the fire by announcing the pending release of a new Facebook plugin, supposedly authorised by the game creators. The founders of the unauthorised Scrabulous suggested last week that Electronic Arts would have a tough time attracting the attention and patronage of a large and dedicated user base, as is the case with Scrabulous, which has nearly 500,000 daily users. Electronic Arts said last week that it would try to legitimise the activity with the release of the new Scrabble application, clearly hoping to capitalise on the success of Scrabulous. However, the Electronic Arts version will only be available in the United States and Canada based on the IP address of users' computers. Electronic Arts said that their version will be free and won't carry any advertisements. Google has made a foray into the virtual universe with a new website, Lively.com, aimed squarely at competing with the online virtual reality world, Second Life. Google unveiled the free service on Tuesday last week, which uses three-dimensional software that allows people to congregate and interact in virtual rooms. Lively currently requires Windows XP or Vista operating systems running Internet Explorer or Firefox web browsers. After installing a small application, users will be able to enter Lively from other websites like MySpace, Facebook, and blogs. Google has spent many months testing Lively at the Arizona State University, and the service is now open to the public as a beta release. And spacewalking cosmonauts successfully removed an explosive bolt from their Soyuz space capsule on Thursday in an effort to establish why two previous crews have landed hard and off course. The explosive device is one of 10 that separate the Soyuz crew module from an equipment compartment before entry into Earth's atmosphere. Russian engineers suspect a bad bolt delayed the compartment's jettison during landings in October 2007 and April 2008, leading to steep and fast descents and hard slams into the ground. The delicate operation involved cosmonauts sealing the device inside a blast-proof canister for analysis when the crew completes its mission next month. Despite assurances the bolt could not detonate in the cosmonauts' hands, flight controllers repeatedly cautioned the men to move slowly and carefully. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
A gas used in the making of flat-screen televisions is being blamed for damaging the atmosphere and accelerating global warming.
Ooh.
That's Phil Burgess.
And your mate.
Yeah, he's a friend of the show.
A lot of administrators ban particular sites for this very reason.
Well, we don't really use much of that technology.
Well, you can't tell me that I couldn't be identified by that number.
I'd say you're in a minority. I don't think many people would have that in their living room.
Interesting.
Well, maybe.
This whole location-based stuff is very new to us down here.
It looks like 2008 will finally be the year of the high-def personal video recorder in Australia.
You have a minefield of devices to choose from.
You can watch it on your LCD, you can watch it on your plasma, you can watch it on your computer, you can watch it on your goddamn PDA.
Next time you're in a nightclub, because I know that you're a fairly heavy clubber.
Doof doof music.
Yeah. Whoa, where did we use all that? And that was just audio.
It could be. If she checks up and goes, what's she doing in the flower?
My wife's listening, she'll be like, oh, who are you trying to cheat?
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, welcome to Tech Talk Radio for yet another week in iPhone Mania Week. I think it's been now gazetted as a public holiday for next year. We all get the day off when they release the next version of iPhone. But hey, there's some parallels that can be drawn here. What have oil companies and telcos got in common? Welcome to the panel. See if you can work that one out. JD, from left to right, you can see it in the studio.
Greetings.
Fresh back from his sojourn north.
Oh, very refreshed after 3,000 kilometres.
Hey? Yes. Yeah, well, you'll know about petrol prices, won't you?
Actually, no.
Oh, well, good, yes. Company man.
Your boss, Bill.
Where have you been? Yeah, exactly. Joining us in the middle, Dr. Ron. Good evening, Dr. Ron.
Dr. Ron in the middle. Hello, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you very much. And on the very far end of the panel this evening, age journalist and independent journalist, and he writes for a lot of great publications, Adam Turner.
Hi, how you going?
Yeah, good. iPhones, that's, yes, yep. What can we say? iPhone week. But before we do iPhone
actually,
week.
Actually, where is it? It can't disappear. It doesn't belong to me.
What okay, do you mean? Well, there is one here in the studio tonight, ladies
two.
And gentlemen. There's two,
but
is
only
there?
One belongs to me, so I'm going to keep my eye on it.
You mean to say, where are they?
Yes,
not where is it?
Where are they?
Oh, good. Who's it connected with, just out of curiosity?
The one I've got on loan is from Optus, and the one that I own is from on Telstra.
Well, you've covered all bases, haven't you?
Yes, I've got a loaner from Optus to review.
We just need a Vodafone to complete the trifecta.
Absolutely. Well, you wouldn't get one on three now, would you?
Not at the moment.
No.
You will soon.
Oh, that's good. Well, we'll talk about that in a shortly. Yeah. Let's go to some correspondence. In fact, before we go to correspondence, let's just alt-tab back to the new chat room that we've got.
Alt-tab. And we've got a chat room now.
Yeah, we've got a chat room now.
Awesome.
We've knocked it up on the weekend, and we've had a few people there testing it out for us. Seems to be working fine. Hello to those listening to us. If you want to join in, have your 5 cents worth or $1.50 worth, whatever you'd like. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. You can see the screen that we're looking at, and you can talk to us live as we do. If you're listening to us on the pod, well, next time, 8 o'clock Monday nights, come and visit us in our little chat room there. We'll pull the sofa up for you and all that sort of stuff. Dr. Ron, you've got some correspondence that needs to be entered
always,
in the minutes.
Always. Hello to new forum users. A. Koulianis in Melbourne. Hello to Warpie. And hello to Bro2830 in Dubbo, New South Wales. It's great to see people signing up at the forum.
I've got fond memories of Dubbo.
It's a good zoo there.
A good zoo.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah.
Western Plains style zoo. We actually drove through it on the way home.
Oh, yes.
You drove through the zoo?
No, Dubbo.
Oh, you drove through Dubbo.
That's right. Zoo's got lots of ferocious beasts in there.
Yes.
Predators, they would say.
They would.
Sharks.
Like an Optus ad.
Absolutely.
Hi, team. I won the Maxtor 1 terabyte hard drive in your recent competition.
Hi, Dwayne.
I've already scheduled my backups. Good to hear, Dwayne. And have started migrating my photos and video across. It runs like a dream. Thanks to you and Seagate for such a fantastic prize.
Fantastic.
Cheers and best regards from Dwayne. You're welcome, Dwayne. Glad that it's working out for you.
Did he get a coffee cup?
I think he did get a coffee cup too.
Oh, good. So he'd be sitting there sipping his latte.
Backing up his
backups,
files and chatting in the
Tech Talk Radio. Come and join us in the chat room, Dwayne, like if you're listening to us live.
Life just doesn't get better, does it?
No, absolutely.
Forrest Lake says, hey guys, not that I'm going to get one, but just thought I'd let you know that the iPhone 3G is available from Telstra on July 11 only in 15 locations, he says.
Yeah, they...
Pretty sad,
they
really.
Fed them.
They did, didn't they? Yeah. I thought Telstra had more stores across our expansive country, or am I just confused?
Optus only had 500.
Stores? Or no, phones, didn't they? There's like 500 phones for the...
A lot of dodginess happened on Friday.
Oh, there was some shonky stuff happening out there in the world, and there's one here on the desk from Optus, so that means they only had 499, did they tell us?
After this one?
No.
TARDIS3 says, I'm leaving for Alice Springs, working there for 3 months. Sadly, I won't have net access to chat live until I return. TARDIS has been a regular forum contributor and contributor to the program, so your contributions will be sorely missed, TARDIS, but keep in touch. I'm sure you'll find a hot spot somewhere. You'll be able to send us the odd message here and there. That's all our correspondence for the week, Andrew.
Very good. Shall we move those?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Moved.
Okay. Yes.
All in favour?
Second, right. Fantastic. Onwards and up to...
There's an eye coming from down the hallway.
Oh, down the hallway, too. Oh, she shouldn't leave the studio door open.
No.
Here.
Alrighty. The iPhone. It's Apple's ubiquitous device, which has gone to the next generation, as I guess all things do evolve over the course of time. People are equating the current plans that you can buy an iPhone on in Australia to that of oil companies and their methods of making money and how the prices go up when it comes to bandwidth. And, yes, it was big talk in the office today. Optus charge anywhere from $50 per gigabyte on its $19 cap. This is for data, because this is the contentious issue.
Yeah.
We just get reamed in this country from all these sorts of things. Vodafone plans include $20 of data. That's not bad. And Telstra, well, would you go there?
No,
absolutely.
Optus are the best of a bad bunch at the moment.
That's good. Just talk amongst yourselves for a moment, boys. There's something funny going on over here.
What is that?
trying to work out what is
the mobile phone vibrating on the bench.
Post, and your toast has just popped up.
Found it.
There it is. Someone lost their phone and they're ringing it to see where it is.
If anyone's lost their mobile phone in the studio here, there's now two missed calls.
Yeah. Very good. But I connected my Optus 3G phone up to a data plan, which isn't an iPhone, for my trip away, so I could actually podcast and listen to the stream whilst I was in Brisbane. Mm-hmm. That's a whole other story. But the most I could get was 200 megabytes. That's the most I could get on a plan, and it was $15, and beyond that I was charged a megabucks per megabyte download.
Megabucks per megabyte. Well, Telstra good. As one of our users is saying here, Telstra gives 5 megs per month. Woo.
That's the minimum.
That's the minimum, isn't it? Hey, listen, you turn your thing on, you'll use 5 meg just turning
it
on.
An iPhone will use at least that much data in the background, even if you don't do anything.
Even 3 gives you 10 megabytes per month without paying for it.
Oh, no, don't. Go there. No, they don't.
Oh, no, you have to pay $5 or something, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's not.
That's the minimum one.
But it's not like Telstra where they charge $1.65 a meg or something. It's bizarre like that.
They are like oil companies.
What is going on in this country? It's ludicrous, because I think even you were saying before, Dr. Ron, that in Europe, the most expensive plans make the Australian plans pale into insignificance.
I was looking at some plans that in Canada, and they had...
They got rogered.
But they fixed it. There was a big outcry, and the telco said, "Oh, yeah, well, maybe that's a bit silly." Okay, so $29.95, Canadian dollars, and you can have half a gig or 5 gig or something. Realistic prices for realistic amounts of bandwidth. It's just completely unrealistic.
Yes, Warlock's just made a very good point, which is what I was going to touch on, is that Vodafone will offer you 5 gig for $39, but not on the iPhone. If you buy one of their HSDPA modems like I've got here in the studio...
A little laptop card.
Now, the interesting thing that we want to know is that if you pull that card out and put it in the Vodafone iPhone or an unlocked iPhone, will you get your 5 gig?
You might get your 5 gig, but you may not get any voice.
Yeah, you will get voice because...
No one can ring on it.
Yeah, because I've stuck that SIM card in a 2G iPhone and being able to make calls on it. Now, I think they will then send you a bill for the calls because it's not included in your 5 gig.
And you'll be paying a fairly high rate.
You'll be paying a bad call rate, but to get 5 gig for $39, who cares?
Yeah. Well,
I don't know if it works, but I'm interested to try it.
Telstra, you can buy a data-only plan, which gives you a SIM. The SIM has a phone number because, as per normal, all SIM cards, those little things, those personal identification modules that go into your phone, has your details on it and a phone number. So... chances are it's not your published phone number, but you can get data only in a little one of those devices and then not be on a plan. But then you pay something like 40 cents per 30 seconds or something like that. But that may be what people want. Adam, what was your first impressions when the device came out? Was it did it live up to its hype?
You mean of the device itself or of the plan?
Well,
the plan was terrible.
Oh, yeah,
the device itself, I mean, it's very nice to use, but for me...
It's thinner, it's nicer.
Well, it's not actually thinner, it's a little bit thicker.
It's got curved edges.
It's got a curved back on it, which unfortunately means it doesn't fit in the docking cradle that came with the first iPhone, and they don't put a cradle in the box with this one. It's going to cost you another $40, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's got a 3.5mm jack on the bottom, which means you can plug any sort of headphones in.
The nice thing is that the first one had a 3.5mm jack, but it was slightly recessed, so you had to have the special skinny headphones like you get on an iPod, so most headphones you couldn't stick into it. This one, the headphone jack is no longer recessed into the unit, so you can plug any 3.5mm headphones into it, which
that's
got to
be
a
100%
change.
Improvement. I would have
liked that idea.
Not much really to change to look at it. Like it's now black plastic with chrome buttons rather than a chrome back with plastic buttons, which is actually good because it's now easy to get a grip on. and the fact it's got the slight curve in the back means it sits better in your hand. The chrome one's a really slippery sucker, and especially because it's so skinny, it's easy to fumble it as you get it out of your hand to out of your pocket to answer a call.
Does it sort of manage to survive the 1 meter top pocket drop test?
Not when it doesn't belong to you. If the people from Optus are listening, I am being careful with it. The speakers are improved on it. Both for, I've rung people like on my old one and then my new one, and they sound better to me and I sound better to them.
So the recovered audio, the audio in your earpiece is better?
The speaker and the microphone in the phone are better. So you get better call quality.
Mm-hmm.
And also then if you put it down on the table to use it to play music, you get better music playback from it as well because it's got its own little built-in speaker. Obviously it's got GPS and high-speed internet. The high-speed internet... Well, I'm using it with Optus, and I'm getting pages at twice the speed that I'm getting them on the Telstra Edge. Now, I know that it's more than twice as fast, but there are other things at play, like the time taken to render the page and all that kind of stuff. So you can definitely see the improvement. The GPS is pretty good, but I don't think it's quite accurate enough to use for in-car navigation. It's not designed for in-car navigation. It can't say to you turn left in 50 metres. But I was sitting on a tram the other night, and it was tracking me as I was going along Flemington Road, and we changed lanes. And we change back, and then suddenly we're in a tree for a while. So
that'll happen.
Yeah, and even at home.
That's what happens with trams. They get off the rails.
Yeah. I was standing outside today in a car park, and I said, where am I? And it put me at least 30 metres away on the other side of the car park. But then other times it's got it within 10. So it could be just a software limitation, but if people like TomTom want to build proper sat-nav software...
There is a software development kit, Adam, available for it?
Yes, there is.
Yep.
But I would hope that the hardware in it can do a better job than what I've seen it do with Google Maps. Or else you're going to be crashing into people.
Yeah, I've got the sat-nav stuff in one of my little Sony Ericssons, and I found that to be absolutely flawless.
Yeah.
Once you give it like 10 or 15 minutes to work out where it is, and depending on how many satellites you can see.
This can find where it is within about 90 seconds.
Oh, that's good. So you get a thumbs up?
I wouldn't buy one today. I think you're a fool to buy one today because the prices are so terrible, and I think we're going to see a little bit more competition in iPhone sales. And they want to gouge early adopters for everything they can get, and within the next few months, the prices would start to drop. So unless you're a Mac zealot who has to be the first guy to have every Mac thing, hold out for a little while. That's my advice.
We're talking about it at work today, and someone said to me, you're going to get one. And I said, no, I'll wait for version 2. I said, this is version 2. I'll wait for version 2 of version 2. Does that make sense, potentially? What happened with the iTunes servers, JD? We're talking about this the other day.
They went into meltdown, apparently. Too many worldwide connections.
Who would have thought?
Mm. So people did Optus's internal network, which makes you wonder about their external network.
And Telstra's as well. Their computers went down in some stores, and, of course, they wouldn't let you leave the store until you signed up for a plan.
Well, they did something...
is that right?
Yeah.
They have guns there, too.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised if they did. This is Telstra.
Now, Apple did something fairly bold. I would go out on a limb and say it was fairly bold. They wanted to have the launch of the new iPhone. They wanted to launch...
Version 2 of the operating system for the iPhone, which also worked on the iPod Touch.
That's right.
And the original iPhone.
Yep.
So all this they were doing all in the one day.
And Mobile Me.
Mobile Me.
And a new version of iTunes.
Yeah, a new version of iTunes. That's right.
All at one time.
All in the one day.
I'm a bit of a Mac Luddite over here. What's that? What's Mobile Me?
What's which?
Mobile Me is the replacement for .Mac, so it's the online cloud that Apple are running.
Oh, everyone's got a cloud, of course. I should have known.
Yes.
But does it have a silver lining is the question.
Well, we'll find out shortly. It didn't on Friday.
The big thing about Mobile Me is it does push email.
Yes.
So it basically can turn your iPhone into a BlackBerry.
Oh, well, if you like BlackBerries too, I guess. But email's very handy.
An Apple BlackBerry.
Yeah. An iBerry.
A spokesman for AT&T, the exclusive carrier for the iPhone in the US, said there was a global problem. That's not what you want your partners to be saying about you, is it? With Apple's iTunes servers that prevented the phones from being fully activated in-store as had been planned.
Did they say what it was? Was it like a denial-of-service attack? As
users.
Yeah, exactly, by its users. Everyone trying to validate their phone within the first... I don't know, maybe they could have got the Guinness Book of Records in there with Firefox.
This was the problem. It was just a mess, complete mess, disaster.
And it was really brought about because Apple were trying to get rid of the grey market in iPhones, where you'd buy one in the US, not activate it, sell it to someone overseas or Canada and so forth, jailbreak it, hack it so that it would work locally, and you'd get it much cheaper.
And so their solution was, well, when you upgrade to version 2 of the operating system or you buy your new 3G version, you've got to activate it in the store. So they actually forced everybody into doing this at the same time.
Grant Stoll says on our little forum at the moment, we're on the chat room, AT&T said it was Apple and others said it was AT&T.
Yeah, it was probably both.
AT&T
have already blown that out of the water because they've already said that in the sometime in the future, they haven't given a date, they will sell an unlocked 8-gig iPhone for $599 US, which works out, which means you could get it shipped here and have it in your hand for $650.
Yeah.
So, and to buy them prepaid here is, well, Apple and Optus are charging $850 or $900 or something like that.
People, if you want to be first kid on the block, you're certainly going to pay for it by the sounds of it.
It might be $750 and $800.
Yeah, because I've been looking at this. I actually want to buy one. It's $729 on prepaid.
Yeah.
And the best way to do it for those that are listening, as far as I know, is $729 outright and then an $80 prepaid, and that will then get you it unlocked for that $80 as well.
It's a funny, funny story.
You'll be able to unlock them for free any day now.
It's a funny story coming out at the moment.
Software comes out.
Some of the US stores couldn't activate iPhones because they required iTunes on their counter PCs, and their tech guys banned iTunes from counter PCs. That's a bit
understandable.
Sad, isn't it? Yes. Before it takes over. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel this evening consists of JD, Dr. Ron, Adam Turner's in this evening in person, and my good self, Andrew McComb. Telstra's pricing was pretty amazing because you can get them on a plan. Now, probably the highest pricing anywhere in the world, I'd have to say, for an iPod. I think congratulations, Telstra, on that. But if you want the 16-gig iPhone, which is the biggest one, there's two models, 8-gig and 16. On a $30 plan, it costs you $399 outright, and it obviously comes down in price as the higher the plan that you go. Telstra's iPhone 3G pricing for the 8-gig device, if you went on, say, a $60 plan, you got $50 worth of monthly voice and text, and you get $10 worth of data.
And that's $10 is actually 5 meg, because it's... Oh, no, sorry. It's...
Yep.
Yeah, it works out at 5 meg.
Yep.
And then you've got to buy a data pack on top of that.
And the data pack for $10 gets you 20 meg.
Woohoo.
So there you go. For that same amount of money, you're getting 30 meg. Now, how can that be when, if you look at what other carriers are charging, like, it's three times the price of other carriers.
Telstra are arrogant. And Telstra also have the advantage that NextG has the best coverage.
Well, they
do. And unfortunately, they've screwed up. I'm not sure if you've covered this recently on the show, but... the iPhone works on three frequencies, 850, 1900, and 2100. And Telstra's network is 850 across the country. Vodafone and Optus use 2100 in the cities. Now, they're trying to come close to the national coverage of Telstra, but outside of the cities, they're going to use 900 megahertz, which doesn't work with the iPhone.
No, it doesn't.
So if you're on Optus or Vodafone and you go outside the cities, you're on GPRS, baby.
Unless you can get a 2100 meg or something in a regional centre or something, but then you're at the whim and call of the other networks if they have those facilities in those areas.
So if you want to leave the cities, you've got to be on Telstra and get screwed. If you don't, wait for 3, and they will offer a better plan than anyone else.
What's happening with 3, Adam?
3 is the yuppie market, the people that would really want these devices.
And they've been very noticeable by their silence.
Yeah, they're putting up this pathetic petition. Please lobby Apple on our behalf.
Yeah. What's really going on there?
The word is that they're going to have it in August. And if you ring 3 and say, I want the iPhone, when are you going to sell it? They'll say, oh, yeah, we're getting it in August.
Really?
So, yeah,
they have to have an Indian accent, though, don't they?
Not the person I spoke to.
Oh, really?
It might depend on
the
time of day.
You've got
good
contacts.
Yeah. I knew the right number to call. And the thing is that even if you don't want to be with 3, because 3 is only in the metro areas, and then once you get outside metro areas, if you're not careful, you roam onto Telstra, and then you really get screwed.
$1.65 a meg.
Yeah, and I think you roam onto Telstra GPRS. You don't even roam onto Telstra HSDPA.
Yeah.
But 3's pricing will certainly be better than the others, but hopefully 3's pricing may force the others to improve their pricing a bit. So even if you don't want to be on 3, the others might improve a bit, except probably for Telstra because they're so arrogant, they just think they can charge whatever they want because we got the best network. But Vodafone and 3 tend to get in price wars with each other. So I would wait and see what Vodafone does with their pricing when 3 comes out.
When
because
3
everyone
makes its
expected
announcement.
Vodafone to undercut Optus played their hand a week beforehand. Vodafone played their hand 24 hours before they went on sale, although it was actually leaked the day before. Telstra didn't release all their pricing until 6 o'clock in the morning on the Friday when they went on sale. So you wouldn't have known what you were getting until you got to the counter. Of course, their pricing was leaked the day before as well. But so Optus went first, and everyone thought Vodafone is going to undercut Optus, and they didn't. Vodafone's plans aren't as good as Optus. So everyone's expecting that Optus will improve, and I think that Three coming into the market will be the incentive that Optus needs to get into another price war and bring it down. So don't buy one today.
It's a bit like Blu-ray when it first came out. It's coming down in price. HD DVD went away and Blu-ray went up in price, and it's coming down again. There was a little dip, but yes, like all good consumer things, if you have to be first on the block, you do pay for it. JD, you went to the Apple store in Sydney whilst you were on your little trek around the countryside.
A trek to Mecca.
George Street Temple.
That's right. I was allowed out for 15 minutes, so I had to sprint through the city to get there, do a quick report for you, and then sprint back out again.
You did. We're about to hear that report.
Oh, good.
How did you do that?
Was it recorded on an iPhone?
That's what I was going to say. iMate, actually, an XDA2.
And they let you in?
They didn't see me doing it.
Don't they have people at the doors waiting for people with foreign
I'm sorry, sir, you can't use that in this store.
That's right. I got a laugh from the girl on the door as I walked in. I asked her if I'd missed 9 o'clock communion.
All right, this is what JD got up to on his holidays.
It's JD here on location for Tech Talk Radio. I'm on the corner of King Street and George Street, Sydney. That's right, I've done a field trip and I'm in front of the Sydney Apple Store. I'm about to walk in. I've just walked into the Apple Store. So I'm in the front foyer here with lots and lots of people, lots of Apple Store staff in their light blue t-shirts helping people out, and a huge display of laptops and desktops. MacBook Air I haven't actually seen before, so this is a bit of an experience to see how small it is. Everyone seems fairly enthusiastic. Let's move inside and see what else is on display. Well, I ventured a bit further inside, and behind the facade, we've got the legendary glass staircase. Every Apple store in the world has a glass staircase. I'm about to go up it. So on the first floor, there is lots of iPods and accessories, a couple of printers as well. Again, lots of people and staff looking out over the glass balcony. Yet another glass staircase up to the second floor. So on the second floor, this is where the Genius Bar is located. So we've got a long bench, lots of Apple staff in dark blue t-shirts with iPod-looking ID cards around their necks, helping customers. While they're waiting, there's some sort of park bench arrangements with lots of people queuing, and there's a couple of stations here with IMAX to play with whilst you wait, lots of bouncy balls and bar stools, very trendy. The 30-inch screens behind the Geniuses are displays, and they're talking about quick tips looking after your iPods and iMacs. Also displays the queuing list for those waiting for the Genius Bar. Nice little touch to keep you interested, also give you some tips along the way. And at the back of the Genius Store, I've just come across the ProLabs at the Apple Store Sydney, a sign advertising the Expert ProLab series of lectures. In the auditorium behind me. None running at the moment, so I can't step in, but one day, maybe I'll get in there. I'm just on my way back down, and passed a fellow with carrying up his 20-inch G5 iMac. And I've got to say, having the Genius Bar on the top floor, not very conducive to actually anyone bringing their broken equipment in, unless it's an iPod, I guess. A bit heavy to carry up two flights of stairs. There is an elevator, but me being me, I decided to walk today. I'm back outside on the street. That was my whirlwind tour of the Sydney Apple Centre. Quite an impressive display, I've got to say. Now time to journey back to Melbourne. It's JD here on location for Tech Talk Radio. See you later.
Thanks, JD.
Nice. Now, that was before the launch of the iPhone, so
the store's probably
changed now. It had been operating for 12 days when I went in. It was obviously a fairly slick operation. I actually thought going in there, being the sort of Apple lover that I am, that I'd be torn about buying something in the shop. And I actually came away thinking, well, there's actually nothing there I want to buy today, which I'm sure they're not terribly happy about, but it was good for me.
What is a Genius Bar?
Now, the Genius Bar, the idea is that they've got Apple experts that will fix your problems in front of you. So to talk about Andrew's friend with the MacBook that had a breakdown, what you do now... What you do is you take it to the Genius Bar, and rather than sort of packing it up and shipping it off and whatever, they'll fix it on the spot if they're able to.
If
they're able to. If they're not, depending on the circumstances, if it's relatively new, i.e. it's the next day or, you know, within a few days' time, they'll just exchange it on the spot. So they've got higher powers, I guess, than most Apple resellers in terms of replacement and repair warranty.
Well, I was going to ask if it was
a software type problem or a configuration problem, they could look at it and fix
they'll
it.
They'll do that straight away. Yeah,
they'll do it straight away. But they will go to a level of hardware analysis as well.
I don't think they'll pull it apart and fix it that way. They might exchange components.
But if it's only a few days old and something diabolical's happened, then they'll just
trot out a new one.
Well, that's pretty good.
Mm.
But you've got to lug it up two flights of stairs.
You do.
Right.
And the elevator was, there's only one, and it was fairly small, and it was chock-a-block, so walking was the way to go.
And the glass staircases?
Oh, fantastic. Yes. And I actually noticed, and I was going to record it, but I didn't bother, looking down at it, it was interesting, the pattern in the glass were little Vs that looked like arrows pointing you up the staircase. It was just interesting.
Oh, trompe l'oeil, as they say, was a very...
So lots of little marketing gimmicks around, as you'd expect. I guess the other thing, and I didn't really mention it in the report, is they've got every model of every Apple product there. So if you want to go in and see the 30-inch screen, which I hadn't seen in real life, it was there, and it's in, I mean, you know, I've got a 37-inch screen sitting on the wall at home, but I generally don't stand right in front of it with a keyboard.
Mm.
So sitting in front of some of the larger screens at a very high resolution was really quite impressive. So if you wanted to see a particular model, small, big or otherwise... They're all there.
When's the Chadston Apple store opening, do you know?
Yeah, no, there's nothing much on the rumour mill other than it's still got the Apple sign on it and it's still there, but it isn't finished.
Hmm.
It's still there. Well, that's good. So there might be a few more pop-up around the countryside.
Well, there's some suggestion that, in fact, the premium Apple store will be in Melbourne as well. So something better than George Street. But it won't be the one at Chadston.
Yes, good. Nothing like a red rag to a bull.
Mm. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Other things happened in the world this week apart from the iPhone. We're going to talk about those very shortly.
Don't forget, if you've got something to add, join the panel now and speak your mind. Visit chat.techtalkradio.com.au and become a part of Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio.
And a 1.5 terabyte hard drive made its way into our livelihoods these days. That's pretty big, isn't it? Seagate, in fact, announced just this week that you can, you will soon be able to buy 1.5 terabytes for your notebook, and 500 gig for your notebook, and 1.5 terabytes for your desktop.
Does it have Titanic written on the side of it?
I don't know, but it feels a bit like that, doesn't it? The way we all put all of our lively data, lifehood data, on one drive, just ready for it to head south.
Hard disks are getting pretty good these days compared to what they were like 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
You still get some failure. There's still a significant return rate, I guess, failure rate that manufacturers have. When I used to sell hard disks a few years ago, it was probably across the board around maybe 3%, 5%, 7%, around those
really?
Numbers.
Yeah.
We get back. As
well, I've only noticed the Western Digital ones tend to melt down a little bit. Their plastic goes a bit funny on the case. In the course of time, but that's my personal experience with them.
I've just been repairing one for our local kinder, and it looks like it was a Dell machine, and it looks like the Hitachi Death Star, or Dexter, decided to die in that one, which is a relatively new SATA drive, so I'm looking for one of those now.
Oh, good. Mm. But I must admit, as Dr. Ron was saying, $99 or $98, under 100 now for half a terabyte, of hard drive, it's not bad in a SATA format.
Yeah, but the bigger the drives get, the less likely people are to back stuff up, the more likely they are to lose stuff.
Well, that's very true. But one of our listeners, Dwayne, he's backing up as we speak on that terabyte that we gave him the other day.
Good work, Dwayne.
That's pretty good.
Yep.
Now, Dr. Ron, you did a bit of an OS upgrade on your Ubuntu.
This is very exciting.
What's Ubuntu, for those who want to know?
Ubuntu is an alternative desktop operating system for PCs. It's a Linux version. Now, come on, you asked, didn't you? It's a Linux...
Sorry, everyone jumped out of their seat.
It's very good, yes.
You really need to warn people when you're going to do that, especially if they're wearing headphones.
Especially I didn't wear my brown underwear tonight as well. Heavens above. It's very loud in my ears. Now, Ubuntu, a Debian Linux distribution. It's very easy to install. It's completely free. Comes with Office software and all sorts of good stuff. Now, I was running an older version, version 6.06, on my computer at home. There's a new version that's available, version 8.04. When I got my updates, you know, like you get your Patch Tuesday Windows updates.
Yes, yes.
It says, these things need updating, do you want to install them?
You're not traditionally known for updating machines. You like leaving them there for a while.
Oh, I know, I usually do.
I remember your Windows box, you left it for a year, and it took you a whole day to update it, didn't it?
Oh, did it?
That was a while back, but I remember.
I've blocked it out.
Oh, yeah.
It's a memory that I've suppressed.
Now, there was a notification that came out that said a new operating system's available. Would you like to install it? Can you imagine if you're at home on your Windows machine, a little notification came up in your system tray and it said, Windows 7's available. Would you like to install it now?
Don't trust it.
Or Windows Vista's available. Would you like to install Windows Vista? You go, what? I'm going to install a brand new operating system. I'm going to download it and install it. And this is essentially what Ubuntu was telling me. Would you like to install a brand new operating system? And I said, hey, what the hell?
Live on the edge. Not the Telstra edge, but your edge.
And this was your production server, wasn't it?
No, this was my, my main workstation at home. I thought, you're only young once. So I backed up some data and thought, yeah, give it a go. Do your worst. A couple of hours later, I was sitting in front of a brand spanking new installation of the latest version of Ubuntu. Works extremely well. I'm very impressed with the speed improvements and also improvements they've made to the user interface. None of my data was lost. It retained all of my old bookmarks, all of my previously visited websites, all of my history information. So I was very impressed with the way it all came together. So I'm going to put a little bit about it on my blog at some point in time, and I've got 5 minutes to scratch myself. So,
okay.
Yes, it was a success story.
Now, there's something else which was quite humorous in the news this week, a woman jailed for hiring a hitman on the internet. You touched on this on the news, Dr. Ron. An Irish woman has been found guilty of hiring a hitman over the internet to kill her partner and family. Now, if nothing else, this is certainly promoting a site called hitman.com, is it not?
Hitman.us.com, which is now no longer there.
Isn't it where you could log in and book a hitman?
The other exciting website
you can get everything on the internet there,
that I didn't investigate was proxymarriage.com.
Oh, my goodness.
You can
go
and buy your own marriage certificate.
I want to know if you can get a virtual hitman, though, to, like, kill your husband in Warcraft
or Second Life.
Or Second
That'd
Life.
Be good, someone take someone out in Second Life.
Exactly.
Ooh, now, this could be a market for that, isn't it?
$100,000 and I'll do it.
Oh, dearie me.
Yes.
So, the things you read about during the course of the show just leaves you speechless.
Didn't one of the CSI New York episodes feature a Half-Life murder which played out in real life?
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
Did it?
From memory, yeah.
Good.
Speechless.
Absolutely.
Without speech.
Let's change the subject. Another thing that you could only read on the internet. Apparently it's now being blamed for weight gain in teenage girls. A US study has identified internet use, sleep, alcohol, coffee, and all that as contributing to weight factors in young adolescent girls. Too much internet's bad for you, but it's all the other things that go with sitting on the internet.
If you use it to buy alcohol and caffeine.
Absolutely. You don't have to physically go and get it, so they deliver
they
it in, don't they?
Yeah, with a pizza.
Researchers surveyed more than 5,000 girls between the ages of 14 and 21 about their weekly habits during the past year. Girls who spent more recreation time on the internet were found to sleep significantly less and consume more alcohol.
No. Don't drink and blog. I learnt that early.
Did you?
Don't drink and Facebook. That's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I can see that.
There'll be all people out there listening saying, I hear you, Dr. Ron. Been there. Learnt that the hard way.
Yes. Mm. All right, we're going to take a break because I think we need to. We'll be back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
If you listen to Tech Talk Radio live, you've probably wondered why you can't chat with the panellists in real time. Surely such technology exists. Well, now it does. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. By popular demand, you can now chat real time with panellists and other Tech Talk enthusiasts. All you need is a web browser, an internet connection, and a comfy chair. Monday nights at 8 p.m, go to chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
Welcome back, Elton John. He's turned the internet off for us a little bit at the moment, but hopefully we'll get back online fairly shortly. Adam Turner writes a lot of columns about television thingies, and there's two big ones that are about to hit our consumer white goods shops, if not you buy them online somehow. The TiVo, which is Channel 7's new little, entrance into the set-top box TV PVR/device recording thingy. And, of course, the Foxtel, the cable TV provider here in Australia. They have their own little Foxtel IQ device. Now, I'm a complete Luddite when it comes to Foxtel, so I think I'm about to learn a few things here, but what do you make of it all, Adam? How's the TiVo going? Is it it's finally hit?
I've got a TiVo and a Foxtel IQ2 set up next to each other at home. Foxtel originally had an IQ, which was their hard drive recorder. Now they've released the IQ2, and that's a high-definition hard drive recorder, and it's to coincide with Foxtel's introduction of high-definition channels. So they now have high-definition sport, documentaries, I think some movies as well. They're very similar. They do the same sort of thing. They let you do things like record two shows at once,
handy.
Pause live TV, that kind of stuff. I actually think as a PVR, as a personal video recorder, the TiVo is slightly better because it's got a few little extra options in the menus that the Foxtel box doesn't have. In terms of making sure that recordings run a bit longer sometimes so you don't miss the end of your show and stuff like that. But they're so similar that I don't think you'd really compare them. I don't think they're really in competition with each other because I don't think someone's going to go out and get Foxtel just for the IQ2. If you're going to get Foxtel, you were going to get Foxtel anyway. And if you weren't, you'd get a TiVo. So I don't think it's like a make or break decision, but they both have to have one. It's like a nuclear weapons. If the others have got one, you've got to have one. But once everybody's got it, the strategic advantage sort of cancels itself out.
Why would I buy TiVo? Why wouldn't I buy a generic off-the-shelf PVR from my local electronic shop?
Well, you can get PVRs from the likes of, we'll say, Sony and Philips and Panasonic and stuff like that. I've never seen one of them that was as good as a TiVo. Partly because they rely on the electronic program guide that's broadcast by the networks, which is embedded in the signal,
yep.
Which is pretty dodgy, and that's the network's fault, whereas the TiVo downloads the electronic program guide from the internet from 7, and it's more detailed. Foxtel also downloads one from Foxtel.
So does it have an Ethernet port in the back? Does
yes,
it
the TiVo has to be connected to the internet to use it.
Right.
Because it wants to download your program guide. And I found out something interesting the other day. I know why the telephone jack, why the Foxtel box needs to be plugged into the telephone.
Oh, yeah.
It wants to call back and check when you order movies because you've got to pay for the movies. And if it can't call back, it'll let you rack up a bit of a bill. And then if you have spent more than, we'll say, $50 on movies and it hasn't had a chance to call back to base to check that you're good for it, it'll stop you hiring any
That's
more
That's interesting
movies.
Aside.
So hang on, now, run that by me again. There's a phone jack.
Do you remember a few months ago we were speculating about why there was a telephone jack on the back of the IQs?
Yep. Well, the guy who came to install it the other day, I was talking to him about it, and he said that's why.
So your IQ device rings out, does it? Or does...
Well, yeah, it rings out when you order a movie to make sure that you're actually good for it and that you've got...
on a 1-800 number, yeah. I reckon, rather than a 1-900 number.
And then once a month in the middle of the night, it rings back just to say hi. But so if you...
Well, in case you nick it and skip town or something.
It's probably... Oh, it's so they can spy on what you're watching, and it's so they can just check if there are any problems with the box. But so
and watch your viewing habits?
Yeah, well, that's... Yeah.
Does the TiVo do that via the internet?
I'd say it probably does.
Yeah.
We don't know for sure, but I'd say it probably does.
It would be so much easier to do that
via
an Ethernet connection than it would be with
it. It's just going to pop out and no one would know.
Yeah.
Unless you're running it through a really good firewall, like a Linux box or something like that, and then you'd pick it up. The TiVo's got a few advanced features that you don't get in most off-the-shelf PVRs. Things like... letting you set up a regular recording, the TiVo calls it a season pass, where you can say, right, I want you to tape Lost for me every week. And rather than just saying, yeah, I'll tape Channel 7 at 8:30 or whenever it's on, it checks the guide to see when Lost is on, because 7 likes to move shows around.
But does it know intelligently when the program actually starts?
No,
or is it still relying on dodgy clocks and timetables?
It's still relying on the schedule, because the networks could technically embed a signal in the broadcast
like
goes,
they do in
starting now,
like they do in parts of Europe.
Yep. They won't do it here.
Okay.
But if they change their schedule, like the TiVo updates its schedule every day, so if 7 decides on Monday that it's changing the shows on Tuesday, the TiVo will probably know. But if you've just told your hard drive recorder, check channel 7 every Tuesday night at 8:30,
yep.
it'll just do that, even if the show's been moved. But because the TiVo doesn't look at the time, it looks at the name of the show, it can pick up if it's moved. Now, there are other ones that can do that as well, but the TiVo does it very well. Another thing that the TiVo does well, it's got a small hard drive, which is annoying, but it's very clever in its hard drive management. You can say to things like, take Lost for me every week, but only keep the last three episodes.
Oh, yeah. Can you change hard drives in those things easily, or is it a non-user serviceable
device? Non-user serviceable, but people will hack it. It's the first thing that people will do once they're
on. Are they standard drives like you buy at the computer shop, or are they...
There's probably certain formatting and stuff. Physically, it'd just be, you just get a bigger hard drive. But then you've got to know how to swap the software over it. But that's done in the US. TiVo hacking, putting bigger hard drives in.
Yeah.
Fairly straightforward. It won't be long until they start doing it. Australia's got a really big history of hacking the first generation TiVos.
Yeah, they used to bring them over before they were available here, didn't they?
Yeah, well, they've been doing it for years. People like Andrew Tridrell have been doing that. But so, the first thing that they will do is hack them to put a bigger hard drive in them. The thing they'll work towards is unlocking the 30-second skip feature, which has been disabled, which lets you jump 30 seconds in the future over an ad. They will let you fast-forward through the ads, but they won't actually let you jump across the ads. And some of the other hard drive recorders, like the Top Fields and the BeyondWiz boxes, will let you jump. But they don't their hard drive management isn't as good as in when the hard drive fills up, it fills up, and they don't have the ability to automatically delete old recordings according to your preferences. Now, BeyondWiz have just announced a new one in the last couple of days, a DPS-2. I've got one coming this week, I hope. Apparently, that does have that feature, so I'll be very interested to see
it. DPS-2.
Yes.
So that's a new PVR.
BeyondWiz PVR.
Right.
Apparently, it does have the ability to automatically delete old recordings according to your preferences, so your hard drive doesn't fill up.
Ah.
For example, I take...
Is this the one you're talking about in your PVR?
No, that was the Top Field one.
Ah, okay.
Because Top Field's put out a new one as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Top Field and BeyondWiz have got new ones, which I'm hoping to have a look at in the next week or so. But from what I've seen so far, the TiVo is the best one you can get. The TiVo will let you, for every... The Foxtel IQ box will let you say, okay, I want you to run every recording for 10 or 15 minutes, or up to 10 minutes over, I think, in case it runs late, which is not enough. Because sometimes like things like, oh, yeah, they act Big Brother. Sorry, I'm just really excited about that.
Yeah, no, I heard that last night. That was good. But
shows, like that, like, you know, shows like that can run more than 10 minutes over.
Ladies and gentlemen, Debbie Anker. But that's a Melbourne gag.
No, I used to work for Debbie.
Yes,
I know
Debbie.
So 10 minutes is not enough. Now, the TiVo will let you expand your recordings to up to 3 hours. But the TiVo will let you change it on a recording-by-recording basis. So if you're recording a show that you know always runs 10 minutes over, you can make that one run 10 minutes over. But if on another night you're recording Spicks and Specks, which you know runs within 1 or 2 minutes, you can just put a small margin of error on that one, which means you're not wasting too much hard drive space recording extra stuff to make sure you get the end. But missing the end of the show is the most annoying thing with a PVR. It's the quickest way to annoy not just you, but the other people in the house who are having to live with a PVR. Of the ones I've seen, the TiVo has got the best chance of actually always getting the entire show.
So, Adam, does the TiVo still use the whole thumbs up, thumbs down?
Yeah, I reckon that's stupid. But just because I'm not a Yank and I'm not used to it, I don't see the point of it.
Thumbs up,
okay,
thumbs down.
There's no stop button on the remote control on the TiVo. That is going to bake a lot of noodles. I don't fancy being the salesman Harvey Norman having to explain to little old ladies, no, your remote control's not broken. It's not supposed to have a stop button. There's no stop button. And you're staring at it. Like, maybe it's on the back. It's just freaky.
What do? You press pause, do
no,
you?
No, you press the TiVo button to get out of it and go back to the main menu. But it doesn't feel right. It feels like you should press stop.
Grant Stoll's asking you about baking noodles here. On the chat line, yes, on the chat forum.
So explain, thumbs up, thumbs down, or that all out?
There's two big red buttons on the remote control. Sorry, a big red and a big green button with a thumb up and a thumb down on.
Oh,
if you like a show, you can give it up to 3 thumbs up, and if you don't like a show, you can give it a thumbs down.
And how much are Channel 7 paying you to send that information back to them?
Well, I don't know. But what I think the thinking behind it is then the TiVo then gets a feel
for... They get Channel 9 and 10s and all that sort of stuff as well, yeah.
The TiVo gets a feel for what shows you like, and then it will start to record them.
I'm sure that's how they're marketing that feature. Yeah,
but it starts to record shows that it thinks you'll be interested in. Now, thankfully... Well,
there goes your hard drive.
Yeah, well, no, that's the thing. A, you can disable that feature, but B, those recordings take lower priority than your recordings. So in theory, at least, I haven't had a chance to test this yet, you will never miss out on a show that you wanted to watch because they recorded something. Yours will always override theirs, and if you run out of hard drive space, their recordings go before your recordings go. But this whole idea of thumbs up, thumbs down, who cares? I don't want this stupid thing to tell me what I want to tape. I don't actually watch that much stuff on television anyway.
I know, you download it. You've told us
exactly.
So it's, even Dr. Ron's now downloading Lost in high def.
Yeah, but it shows like, you know, Spicks and Specks and the Gruen Report. The Hollow Man, have you seen that?
Yes,
yeah,
yeah,
that's clever, wasn't it?
Yeah. Very good.
But you're not going to download that because it's original. It's not, yeah, hasn't been on anywhere else. But anything here that's already been on in the US or the UK, you can download. And I don't like to download stuff. It's not because, sorry, I do like to download stuff. It's not because I can't wait for the network to show it. It's because I can't stand putting up with the way the networks treat the show. And I hate it when I miss it or I miss the end of it because they move it because they run it late. If they would show it properly and treat viewers with a bit of respect, I'd be more likely to watch it when it's on TV. It's not just because I'm so impatient I need to see it 3 days before everyone else. It's because I actually want to see the end.
Are we going to have any limitations using the TiVo when we're watching other networks?
No, not that I can tell.
I'm Seven thinking a la Foxtel, yeah, and...
Well, you can't... No, TiVo only works with freeware. You cannot use it with pay TV.
Right.
Foxtel, if you want pay TV, you've got to have an IQ too. But I haven't seen any signs on the TiVo box that it favours 7 in any way.
Adam, what about the EPG program guide? We've seen the various reports about Channel 9 and Ice TV going at it. What about the TiVo EPG? Is it going to have Channel 9 in it?
Yes, it does have Channel 9 in it. Now, TiVo actually, because I assumed that it would be using the information embedded in the broadcast signal, which is not very good. But they are actually licensing that data from, I think, a company called HWW, which are actually owned by Channel 9. And they're the same ones that the, when you see a website for like Yahoo 7 or The Age or something like that, where they have their TV guide, it's not City Search, whatever, that's the people who they license it from.
Right.
So TiVo are licensing it from them. But the free-to-air networks and the group that represents them called Free-to-Air Australia have said that we will not license the data to any personal video recorder that has the ability to skip ads. So the TiVo and the Foxtel box will not skip ads. You can fast forward, but you can't actually jump 30 seconds into the future.
Yep.
But the thing is, I don't see how they're going to enforce that, because the Top Field and BeyondWiz boxes that can extract the data from the free-to-air signal, they can skip 30 seconds, and I don't, unless they come around to your house with a lawyer, which I wouldn't put it past them, but I don't know. It's just fear-mongering tactics from the commercial networks.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, fear, what is it? Fear, uncertainty,
it's a bit
and
of
doubt.
A frail grip on reality,
and
really,
then,
isn't it?
Because they're about to lose Channel 9, sue Ice TV to try and put off everybody else, because they want to control this data. They think that they own it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they got rid of Big Brother, so that's a good start, isn't
yeah,
it? Really?
That's a good start.
All right. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron is in the seat this evening with Adam Turner, and JD is here. We're talking all things about iPhones and PVRs and TVs and stuff like that at the moment, because there's a plethora of it on the market as we speak and coming out. I'd hate to be a consumer. I think we touched on it last week about being a consumer from the old good old days of VHS and standard def. You know, we didn't have too much of a thing to choose from back then, but now all the acronyms just get carried away.
The tech journalists say amongst themselves, because we struggle to follow this stuff sometimes, and we talk to each other online during the day, and we often say we don't see what chance the average consumer has of following all this stuff if we struggle with it sometimes.
Absolutely. And then being in the industry yourself, I can see good quality pictures leaving me, and I'm amazed by they've been through the ringer by the time they come out on a digital television set here. Yeah. So it is. It's quite amazing. Speaking of picture quality, high def on Foxtel. What do you reckon compared to free-to-air? Better or worse?
From what I've seen, worse, but I think it was the television's fault. I've compared standard definition AFL on free-to-air and standard definition AFL on Foxtel, and the free-to-air is slightly better. And that's from looking at it at home on my Sony Bravia, which I know has a good picture.
Absolutely.
So if the picture's dodgy, it's not the Bravia's fault. Now, I've seen Foxtel's high-definition AFL broadcast, because I went to the footy with them a couple of weeks ago to the Carlton-Richmond game, I think it was. And they had it set up in a super box, and they had the game on the televisions. The game did not look that great. They were running it through Samsung televisions. I'm pretty sure it was the Samsung televisions that were the reason why it didn't look that good. And I pointed it out to them and said, I don't think you're doing yourself any favors using these televisions. And they said, oh, yeah, but we've got to deal with Samsung. And I said, well, that's
so
great.
So put a nice LG monitor there and rip the badge off and put Samsung badges on.
You think LG looks better? You go for a lucky gold star before you go for a Samsung.
I think LG's not too bad. What would
not too good either. Somewhere in the middle.
Okay, would you go to take this outside,
somewhere
boys.
In the middle.
Sony?
A Bravia. Yeah, I Bravia? Think for LCDs, Bravia is about as good as it gets.
Back after the break.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage?
What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus have again had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Eddie's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to.
Sure, probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking to the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on e-pray, and you get a whole service.
How does it go?
It goes...
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
The Panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here, Dr. Ron, Adam Turner and JD.
There's a lot happening here tonight.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know where to look, really, do you? It's all over and there's fights going on in the studio.
It could have been the five coffees that Adam bought in for us all.
Oh, excellent, yes. Excellent. Yes, a couple of interesting things coming in on the chat server. It is up on test at the moment, so bear with it if it's just a tad on the giving people a bit of grief at the moment, but seems to be a bit of a success, so we might move it somewhere. So we're big.
Adam's on his next coffee.
Is he? Oh, it's got to be cold, that one. Oh, my goodness me.
Might have to go and warm that up next ad break.
There was a question here about data rates. You know about data rates on HD or whatever?
No,
it was?
I know what the resolution is, but I don't know what the data rate is.
Yeah.
Not quite enough is my guess.
Yes. If it's a bit soft and furry, it sounds like it's a bit lacking, but then again, that's what you get from a broadcaster that likes to run 10 different things on their one bit of cable at one time.
They're renowned for having a terrible SD picture compared to free-to-air.
Oh.
And even what I've seen... Now, looking at the football standard definition on TiVo compared to on the Foxtel channels, the Foxtel free-to-air channels, the TiVo is better. So Foxtel doesn't look as good on standard definition. I haven't checked out the high definition yet, but I'm suspecting it will probably be the same from what I saw at the football.
I wonder if it'll prove in time. It's one of those things where as consumers get more savvy and get to realise what a good picture really looks like, then they might go, hey, what's going on here?
Consumers are stupid.
Ooh.
Sorry.
Ooh. Yeah, well,
anyone listening to this show
not
is
our
obviously exempt from that because
people
they're
who
so smart that they listen
aren't listening to,
the show.
To us.
People who don't listen to this show.
That's right. Then they're the ones that aren't informed.
I'm sorry. Our ratings have just plummeted. Suddenly the chat room's empty.
What's that sound? It's the sound of a truck reversing. That'll start them up, won't it? Back it up, fella.
They are, though.
Let's talk a little bit about Telstra and NextG on a technological point of view that their NextG network is getting faster. As if we don't have enough bandwidth,
so
they'll make it faster.
Money faster.
And yes, exactly. They can. You can reach your data limits quicker. I think is probably where they're going with this.
Yeah, 5 meg.
Yeah. Telstra and its network suppliers, Ericsson, are trialling enhanced high-speed packet access. There must be an E in front of HSDPA technology that could result in a whopping 42 megabits per second mobile broadband speeds by next year, if you're within 2 foot of a mobile base station.
Yeah, we've been through all this. 42 meg if you're within 2 foot.
And you're the only person logged on to the exchange, and there's nothing else.
The world has come to an end, and you're like the last guy standing there. You'll have really good Facebook access.
Yeah. But that's good. You know, Sol can put that on his resume. I've got 42 meg access throughout Australia, you know. Ooh.
Lies, damn lies, and Telstra press releases.
Well, I'll go there with Shane Warne, as we discussed last week, Sol and Warney.
Yes.
People believe, Warney spins much better than Sol's, really, isn't it? Absolutely. HSDPA operates in the 850 meg spectrum for Telstra and is expected to achieve speeds of 21 meg this year and 42 meg next year, according to those in the know at Telstra. So there you go, watch your space. Then all we need now is devices that can handle that. Because at the moment...
rubbish. There's no average person, your average user and your average thing that you're using... The difference between 21 and 42 is ridiculous. It's nothing. It's like having $5 billion or $6 billion. But it's not because you won't be able to take advantage of it anyway.
Changed ISPs at work during the week. just for something completely different.
You're now an iiNet baby.
We went from Optus to iiNet. And let me tell you the difference.
That's because you couldn't get...
I can see out the window now.
Was that because you couldn't get internode on your exchange, or am I thinking of somebody else?
Yes, it's because I couldn't get internode on the exchange, and because Optus was just having too many outages and no one could explain it, I said, can't run a business like this. See ya, toodaloo. And as a result, the ADSL's gone from 13 megabits down to 21 megabits down now that we've changed.
Yeah.
Same line, same everything else, and we've turned NXM on, and it flies. So... bit of a bouquet to iron. I rang them today for tech help.
They're not renowned for their...
They're like everybody else. Takes 20 minutes to answer the telephone, and they bundle you off as quick as they possibly can.
My friend Rula hates iiNet. She bags them online all the time.
Really? Well, so far, so good, but...
was it local tech support, Andrew, or did you end up in another country?
I had an accent which was somewhat familiar.
Right. If you're a 3 customer.
No.
No? Oh, a familiar accent if you're an Australian.
If you're an Australian.
Oh, good. Okay. That's good.
Yes.
Must have been a wrong number.
Yes. But it's very funny, actually, because as soon as you get off the phone from tech support, you get an email saying, how did we go in our tech support? Have you seen that?
Badly.
Oh. I said, have a listen to Tech Talk Radio tonight, and we'll tell you all about it. Nothing like a red rag to bull. Also, NASA, the people that launch space shuttles, they're going to pasteurise all their space shuttles. They're going to put them out to pasture. NASA has announced that it intends to officially retire the aging space shuttle fleet by 2010, 4 years before it has replacement craft ready.
Oh.
That's a
long wait on the space station.
Aren't they going to hitch a ride with the Russians?
With the Soyuz systems.
Is there? I said, get a kite out that can rise up on the carbon emissions out of some of these, you know, countries at the moment. But anyway, the space shuttle fleet will make 10 more flights, mainly to be adding modules and things like that to the International Space Station and carry out repairs and upgrades to the Hubble telescope. The retirement will leave the U.S. without orbital capacity for at least 4 years until the booster program is complete. European and Russian launches will service the space station in the meantime. So there you go. The world's number 3 biggest population will not have any space capacity. I wonder if China will ever get that way inclined. They've got all the population in the world, really, haven't they?
The space shuttles are very old. They were first launched in the early 80s. First space shuttles in the early 80s, I think. 82 or 83. And they were probably designed...
In the 70s.
Oh, 10 or 15 years before then. So they really are...
About them in the 70s.
That's it. It's old technology, and they've been retrofitted. They've been upgraded progressively, but...
Some have been burnt.
Yeah, they need to be replaced, and there needs to be, new stuff rolled out.
Yeah. As you say, it's fairly old technology. Andy Thomas, Australian,
Adelaidean. They don't like to put new technology in space, though.
Don't they? Why not?
No, because it's got to be space-hardened, and it's got to be proven over time. They don't put Pentium 4 processors in satellites.
Oh, no. They use stuff that's like what I've got at home.
Yeah, the old...
What have you got at home?
Like, your 386 and your 286 and...
I was going to say 605. Stuff that can handle the radiation. Because I've spoken to the people here who build the satellites, and they don't do that because it might fail. It's not proven. And you don't go to all the trouble of putting a bird up there to have it fail because you tried something new.
Valid point, really, isn't it, when you think about it? Anyway, so there you go. The poor old space shuttle kind of... going to mothballs very shortly. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Come visit us on the chat room. There are some issues there at the moment because we are testing it this evening.
It's a test system.
It is test. Yes. It seems to be very popular, so we will fix that for next week's show. In the meanwhile, back with more in a moment. Mars got invaded from Earth today.
Not doing anything wrong, got nothing to worry about.
Probably a reason for that.
Is that not a fair call?
Damn my tunes. Damn it to hell, I say.
If you're driving along, don't text while you're driving. It's bad for your health.
So if you want social media traffic, you have to consider the audio.
They embed an image in it that's got a unique number as its name.
Entertaining.
You've got to look at me in that tone of voice.
Informative.
Do not switch off your brain.
Independent.
People are blogging about it already.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Bit of common sense, people, please.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron, hey, boy, has the night gone like a rocket tonight, or a space shuttle, as they say.
No, not anymore. Not like a space shuttle.
Let's not get grounded.
Okay, good. We were talking about storage. The bigger they are, the further you fall. Pioneer developing a 400 gigabyte optical disc, just because they can. They're good, especially with a fingerprint or a scratch. Let a kid get to it, and that's it. There goes
400 gig.
Absolutely. Pioneer has developed an optical disc that they say can hold up to 400 gig of data, easily surpassing previous announced prototypes.
So we're talking about something like the DVD, are we? That type of media?
Well, I'm assuming it's the traditional little, you know, circular disc that we all know and love so well at the moment.
And what,
different
is
the, colour.
What does a DVD hold in terms of its capacity? If you
about 4.3 gig?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and if you're lucky, and then you can go the dual layers, which you'll get about twice that.
And these guys reckon
400. That's
400 gig.
But there are some people saying that they think that Blu-ray will be the last of the physical medias anyway, and that after Blu-ray we'll move to
clouds.
Things, the cloud will move to streaming media and stuff like that, or we'll move to hard drive-based storage or that kind of stuff. So, yeah, they can build their 400 gig optical device, but by the time it comes to market and we need it, it might be old technology.
Absolutely. And that's what we've got to look at, really, in technology. Do we need it? Do we need 400 gig on an optical drive? Probably not. We'll all be in the cloud very shortly.
We will need 400 gig. Don't be that schmuck who says, oh, you know, there'll never be need for more than five PCs in the world and no one needs more than 16
of RAM. We probably don't need an optical disc.
That's what I'm saying, that by the time we need 400 gig, we might not want it on an optical disc.
There's a very interesting program. We're going to talk about Microsoft in just a second, but SBS last Monday night ran... a couple of nights back, ran The Cutting Edge, which was all about Bill's exit from Microsoft.
I was going to watch it.
And one of the very interesting points that they made was that one of the big failures of Microsoft was the internet. They never managed to get that.
Didn't see it coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, they did, but they didn't tackle it the right way.
And they saw it coming like a bus that's just hit you.
Absolutely. And their foray where they went to try and buy Yahoo was probably their last current effort to buy their way into the lucrative online world of advertising and search. Because, let's face it, live... Who's heard of it? People go, do you use Live? And they go, what? So, poor old Microsoft there. But
it's a good point. When search engines like Yahoo were already alive and kicking and going great guns on the internet, Microsoft was still shipping operating systems without internet protocol as a network protocol on the computers. So,
yeah,
they have always been one or two steps behind, haven't they?
Yep. But I don't see these things coming.
So, yeah, very interesting program if you managed to catch it recently on the telly. But Microsoft are going to release their new Essential Servers in November, which is really Windows Server 2008 with all of its plugins and add-ons such as Small Business Server and its Virtualization Server, which lets you remotely come in and do stuff like that. Microsoft plans to release its new OS aimed at mid-sized businesses as well as the next version of Small Business Server. On November the 12th is the big day. Both Windows Essential Business Server, which is known as EBS, another acronym for us all to remember.
EBS.
EBS 2008.
Essential Business Server.
And SBS 2008 will be available on that day. I'm not really 100% sure what the difference is between EBS and SBS, but probably a few extra client licenses if I know Microsoft.
So this SBS is different to the other SBS you were talking about?
As opposed to the broadcasting,
One's a TV network, the other one's a Small Business Server?
Yeah, it's designed
for... the product name.
Yeah, it's designed for 10 or less clients in a small business environment, which probably caters for 90% of small businesses in Australia, or globally, I would have thought.
Well, at least in Australia, most small... The definition of small business here is different than the definition of the small business overseas. You get people come over here, the Yanks come over here and talk about small businesses of 100 people. That's a medium business.
That's a medium here, isn't it? And we talk about SMEs here.
Yeah.
Small enterprise.
Yeah, small business here is like, you know, under 20 or something like that, even under 10. And that's what the bulk of the businesses are for every Telstra or IBM or whatever. There's 100 little corner mobs out there with 10 people or whatever. If you're a real estate agent or something like that, you've what, got 10, 15, 20 people, you're still a small business.
I think it's a good product if you want to do that sort of thing and you're in your business, but there are now other great products out there. We use them. Zoho is one of them, where you can get all the office stuff in a cloud
all
and you
the
can collaborate.
Stuff is on, small businesses, you should be seeing how much stuff you can do online. Things
it's
like
free.
Salesforce. Not just free, but it's also... You can configure it all online, manage it all online. You don't have to look up, like hosted Exchange. You get someone to host your email, Salesforce.com to host your customer relationship management and all that kind of stuff. You don't want a server running out. If there's only five of you, you don't want to have to hire a specialist to keep all the machines ticking out the back. All you want is a fast pipe and pay a data center to look after it all for you. And then you concentrate on what you do best, which is whatever your business is.
Yeah. It's where we've gone, really, before. Remember the old dumb terminals when we used to have a mainframe? It's sort of, we've gone full circle instead of...
Well, that was a mistake to leave that. That was a good way of doing it in many ways.
Mm.
Pushing everything out to the desktop is kind of what screwed things up.
Mm. Yes. Anyway, I guess we've got clouds coming from everyone. There's the one, what's the Apple one?
MobileMe.
MobileMe.
Yeah.
There's Zoho. There's the Mesh from Microsoft.
Yeah.
There's Google's version.
Google Apps.
Google Apps, yeah. All that sort of stuff. So everybody's moving to the free online storage environment. And I think with Mesh, when we had a chat to them, they were giving 5 gig away of shared and personal storage, so you can actually, you know, share your stuff with others. So I think it's got a lot
they're
going
late,
for it.
Like everything else, they're late.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Anyway, we'll watch this space and maybe buy Windows 2010 or something. You never know. They might get something there. eBay and PayPal, has the dust settled on this yet, guys?
No, not by a long shot.
They got their butt kicked. They really did. I cleaned that one up because they're on community radio. They got their butt kicked.
Do tell, what's your version of the events?
Well, they were trying to be too clever for their own good, and they got put back in their place.
Yeah, Triple C certainly did that very quickly, didn't they? ITY was saying that they'd received more news from concerned eBay buyers, eBay users about eBay's portrayal of PayPal as the way to transact on the auction site.
The only way.
Yeah, yeah, sorry, the only way.
Is the word you're missing. Yeah.
Writing to their banks to see if they believe that direct deposit is no longer a safe way to transact. So they're trying to put the Cribers up everybody else, thinking that direct deposit's a way to go.
I mean, I know you've explained this before, but just to make sure everyone realises, eBay owns PayPal.
They do.
When you buy something on eBay, eBay gets a slice of the money. When you use PayPal to pay, eBay gets a slice of the money. So if eBay forces you to use PayPal, they get to double dip. And they make up this story about it being safer than everything else.
They're making money from the merchant, the person that's selling the item. They're making money from the person that's buying, making the purchase.
Yeah.
So they are double dipping, aren't they?
And they had the nerve to try it on us because they knew that, you know, other markets wouldn't put up with it. And, thankfully the ACCC stepped in and said, I don't think so, Sunshine.
They're doing a good job for the consumer, really.
Oh, about time.
Absolutely.
How toothless are they?
Another thing about eBay and PayPal and Gmail, they've all teamed up to try and limit the amount of spam or phishing mails that their customers receive. Because I know we get several daily to the feedback at Tech Talk Radio. I mean, none of us have subscribed to PayPal or eBay through feedback. I can tell you that.
We get all the spammy.
You get spam to that.
Yeah.
Isn't that the one that you don't put online and you just say on the air?
No, that's the on air one.
Oh, that's on air. It'd be interesting if you got spam to that one.
Yeah, no, I don't know how they find them, but by goodness me, they find them. But yes, there's a bit of a concerted push by the majors looking there to try and limit it. As of today, customers of either PayPal, eBay, or Gmail accounts will be protected, apparently, from malicious mails, thanks to the use of email authentications. In this case, the firms will be using domain keys and...
Yahoo already does that, I think.
Yeah, so basically, we'll see what happens. But I still think it's not going to stop the inundation of phishing URLs
and
stuff like that that comes in.
If you're smart with your email address, you won't get spam. I changed my email address about 2 or 3 years ago, and for 12 months I got no spam.
I just upped the spam filter and I get no emails.
I didn't need the spam filter. I got no spam for a year because I was careful what I did with my email address. And
it's
the reason why I started getting spam is because one of my stories that ran on the Sydney Morning Herald website, unfortunately my email got published in the metadata tags for that image. So you couldn't see it on the page.
But the robots picked it up.
Yeah, if you read the source code of the page,
you would see it.
You would see my email address. And the reason why, because I couldn't figure out why I started getting spam, so I put my email address into Google and it found it on the page. So it just takes that. That's all it takes.
And then they've got you.
But I still only get 2 or 3 pieces of spam a day at the most.
It amazes me. You go to some websites and people put their emails up there and plain.
Yeah, no, you've got to have separate email. I use my Hotmail address for things that I want to subscribe to that I don't want to get spam about, and then that just gets pummeled with spam.
I was about to say, Adam, you've been talking about your email address in the singular as if you just have one email address. How many emails do you have?
Oh, at least half a dozen.
It starts to snowball in the line of work that we're in, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You start to create them.
Use them strategically. I've got my work one. I've got my personal one. I've got one that I've set up as for my iPhone. I've got my Hotmail one, which used to be my personal one, is now my just subscribing to junk online because I don't want to get stuff back. Also, the people I use Fastmail for my email as my email provider, and they let you set up multiple addresses. So,
but do all these funnel into the one address for you? So ultimately, it all ends up in the same place.
No,
you have
don't.
To check each of these individually.
Yeah, but I don't bother checking the Hotmail one. The Yahoo
one,
I check with a messenger.
Check it. No.
I use with a instant messenger to check it.
Right.
So my personal one is a Yahoo one and gets checked with instant messenger, and my work one is through Fastmail, and I check that with my mail client on my desktop.
We often create aliases.
Yes, aliases. That's what I was saying.
Yeah.
It's a television program, isn't it?
It is. It's a very good television program. If we have to create a new domain for somebody, someone like myself or Andrew, and we're testing, we'll often create maybe like admin or technical at abc.xyz or something.
Yeah.
And that usually gets redirected to our primary mail addresses. So we could potentially have hundreds of mail addresses that will
on
end
this
up,
track.
The mail ends up in our inbox.
That's what Fastmail let you do.
You have to cull them every now and again, or it just gets unmanageable.
I've created one just for newsletters, and I get all the newsletters sent to that. And if I ever start getting too much spam coming to that address, I'll scrap that, and then I'll go and resubscribe to all the newsletters with a new email address, and then wait and see. And if you subscribe to them all with different email addresses, you can then actually pick up who's giving you the spam.
Did you see the beauty that came out during the week? There was a bit of a fracas in the Middle East where those sort of things happen. When I think Iran launched a couple of missiles.
I actually got that one.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, apparently there was a deluge of email saying World War III had started. Click here for more information.
Yeah.
And oh boy. They're quick. You've got to give them that. Absolutely quick. Anyway, that's the world of spam at the moment. We're going to take a break and we'll be back with more in a moment.
If you listen to Tech Talk Radio live, you've probably wondered why you can't chat with the panelists in real time. Surely such technology exists. Well, now it does. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. By popular demand, you can now chat real time with panelists and other Tech Talk enthusiasts. All you need is a web browser, an internet connection, and a comfy chair. Monday nights at 8 p.m, go to chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening, Talk.
Any questions?
You're all speechless at this.
I know. You're listening.
You're listening.
You've got the world's most aggressive spam filter.
You're listening.
If you've got the wrong SIM card, it's because they sold you the wrong thing.
Talk radio.
You may have digressed. The network's probably ready for fiber to the node now.
Telstra has lost the ACCC court case.
They download loss because they can't stand watching it on commercial television.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
That you are. That's the last stages of Tech Talk Radio this evening before we call it quits for yet another week. Dr. Ron Google's 3D World. You mentioned this on the news. Do you know what it's about?
I do, a little bit. I haven't signed up for it yet, but I had a good look. Good look at the front page and had a look at what it was all about.
And up there with Second Life.
Yeah, the service is called Lively.
Yeah.
Yeah, lively.com. You can go there and register. You can hop into a virtual room. You can talk to real people. You have animated
real hitmen in there?
Animated real hitmen. Maybe you could buy real hitmen. Yeah, potentially.
If it's a bit like Second Life. They don't like you doing things like that in Second Life.
They don't like you causing mischief, do they?
No.
Look, this system's absolutely free, and Google haven't really made any secrets about it being targeted squarely at competing with Second Life. And it's in beta at the moment.
Oh, is it Windows Vista/XP? That's a bit harsh.
What was that one?
You have to be running Vista or XP.
Yeah, you do, yeah. You have to be running Vista or XP as your operating systems. You have to be using Internet Explorer or Firefox as
so
a web browser.
Mac users and Ubuntu
at
users?
At this stage, it does. It rules out Ubuntu users. It rules out Mac users.
Did you download a client?
It also rules out users of handheld devices, PDAs and such things, which would be great if it takes off, if you could have access from a portable device.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, you're correct, Andrew. You have to download some software and install some software. You can create your character, your avatar, as they call it. You can dress them. You can put them in a room. You can invite other people.
So it's Tamagotchis all over again.
It's Tamagotchi version 3.
Do we need another version of Second Life?
I don't know.
Maybe Get a Life. Have you been to that website?
Get a First Life.
That's the one. But apparently this is more kiddie friendly. It's designed for the younger.
I don't know how they're going to moderate it or how they're going to look after child safety.
I don't trust anything that says it's kiddie friendly. There's no way I would let my kids use anything that lets you interact with other users. I let them use things like ABC Kids Online and Nick Jr. and Dora the Explorer and stuff like that because there's no way you can interact with other users.
Yeah, it's really that, isn't it? Yeah. Interaction or no interaction with other users?
Let them use anything where you can interact with other users.
Mm. The interesting thing with Lively.com is that after you install a small application, Google say that you'll be able to enter Lively not only from your web browser, but also from other websites. So you can have a plug-in in your MySpace page, you have a plug-in in your Facebook page, you could have a plug-in in your blog.
Yeah.
And you could, if you put a link there, for example, on your blog, Andrew, talk to me now in Lively, click here to jump straight into my chat room, and it would take you straight in there.
So the same way you can embed a YouTube window in another web page.
Exactly, that's the idea, I think. It's the idea. So we're going to keep an eye on that one.
Social networking has gone just rampant, isn't it?
Yes, but they're touting it as being a free service, and I don't know about money or currency, like we're joking
about the Linden dollars,
which they have in Second Life. I'm not sure what Google is doing at the moment with Lively.com, but we'll keep our eyes on it, let you know.
Now, here's a thought. You go into your Second Life or into your Lively site, and on the wall you've got the web pages of the various other social networking sites, and that'd be fun.
That would work. I think you can do that, yeah.
It'd be kind of sad, but nesting a social networking site, isn't it?
What about a gateway between the two?
Yeah, well, you could do that too.
Scary.
Oh, well, bring on Google. They've got deep pockets. They can develop anything they like, and hopefully it'll...
This could be just something that one of those guys has done in his spare 10%. I think it's 10% of their time every week employees get to do whatever on earth they want, and a lot of their projects come out of that.
Okay. Warlock's got some comments on our chat server at the moment. Second Life is better than Lively. Lively is too lagged and unusable. And Second Life
not
now...
worse than our chat room.
I was about to say that. Go and settle. And Second Life now works on mobile devices.
Yeah.
So you can sit on the bus and play in your...
Look out the window, people. Look out the window. Yeah,
it's the nature of the beast. If people are wanting to use this sort of a service, they're going to want it accessible from a mobile device. So Google needs to look at that if they're serious. It is in beta at the moment, so they are still testing.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll see that in the future.
New processors are on the cards for Intel, the Centrino 2. Intel is expected to unveil its new platform, the latest version of its technological processors for laptops, as early as next week. The platform is expected to offer faster memory and further focus on reduced power consumption. Because they are pretty thirsty when it comes to the jungle juice when processors these days. Formerly codenamed Montivia, the new platform combines some new mobile processing chipsets supporting DDR3 memory and 802.11 ABGNN, which is absolutely everything. Wi-Fi. So you can plug it in, turn it on, which means you'll get the latest and greatest Wi-Fi.
Does anybody care anymore about a faster processor? You don't really hear people raving about, especially now that we've gone dual core, the megahertz war is over, because it's now the core war, how many cores we can squeeze onto a die. But the processors are now fast enough to do most of what you want to do, unless it's really high end, like, graphic editing or video editing, whatever. Yeah, fair enough. But for your average day-to-day person, that's why these EPC things are taken off, because they've got enough grunt to do almost what you want. I don't think people care so much. It's give me services, give me connectivity, just don't give me a little bit more speed. I don't care anymore.
I had a situation at work the other day where I had the hardware would support more RAM, so I could put more RAM into the device, but the applications and the software couldn't.
Yeah.
It was up to pussy's bow when it got to the level of how much RAM was in the application. So, yes, you could well be onto something there.
So you're saying the applications couldn't take advantage of the extra RAM?
No, that's right. That's right. That was one of my IBM workstations, for one of my editing suites. I'd love to put some more in there, but it just says, oh, you can, but we can't use it.
Is it a brand IBM workstation?
It is, an 8200.
What possessed you to buy that? Do you need
two? Turnkey system, Squire.
Oh, all right, then. It's not just for checking your email.
No, browsing. Okay. It's got two dual Xeon processors in it and all that. It's a nice little device. But anyway, if you watch Channel 9, you'll probably see its work there.
You see its handiwork. Do you have an IBM screwdriver to take the lid off with IBM keyboards?
A $500 IBM
screwdriver. Yeah, and an IBM mouse.
It's just got a little clippy handle.
Little clippy bit.
Anyway. All right. Yes. So there you go. That's pretty much Tech Talk Radio. The only other interesting piece that I have here before we go to you, Dr. Ron, for the Odd Spot gadget and website of the week is Aussie students take home a trophy at an international contest when it came to, they triumphed over 200,000 students from 100 nations to achieve the first place in Microsoft's 2008 Imagine Cup competition.
Come on, Aussie.
The Aussies have got a bit better imagination than those not Australian.
Microsoft.
Absolutely. The competition, which is now in its 6th year, is designed for students from around the world to showcase their talents and create an innovative solution to a real-world problem. Well, that's what happens. We come up with these great ideas and they get taken offshore, don't they?
Yeah.
The brain drain or whatever it is that they call it. So there you go. Aussie students doing good things when it comes to travelling overseas. All right. That's pretty much us for this evening. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Ron's Odd Spot gadget and the thing which
when did it become
cringe.
Mine? Have I got ownership of
you
these
do.
Segments now?
You do. And you're going on holiday shortly and we don't know what to do. We'll just have to finish the show early.
By listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual power. And I've got some residual power.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
over a second.
Give fingerprints. Now,
we may have digressed.
Talk radio. Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
kilos in a second was good, but you're not expecting it if they do a thing.
Well, this talk to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Son of my own.
This week's gadget is a webcam.
Oh, yeah.
But not just a webcam. It's a webcam that's a Wi-Fi webcam with a web server built in.
Oh, this is one you bought on eBay.
Yeah. I'll tell you the meaningless model number. It's a Linksys model. Linksys WVC54GC wireless webcam. Traditionally, you'll connect webcams to PCs and Apple Macs via USB or Ethernet, but have you ever wanted to plant a webcam somewhere where you couldn't set up a PC or you couldn't have an Ethernet port?
Not the kid's bedroom.
Careful. Well, kids bedroom, like you do with intercoms or the baby monitors.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, put it out on the power pole so you can see the kids scratch your car at night.
That's right. You want to watch the cat or dog out the back.
The bogans out in the street, like you're screaming at each other. Hi, if you're listening.
Look, this Linksys...
They axed that show, didn't they?
This Linksys webcam has a built-in 802.11g interface. It's got motion detection. It can record images to your computer when it's triggered. It can send an email notification with a short video clip of what woke it up. Well, that was a clever little feature.
Cool.
You can view live video from any internet-connected PC. You can even create password-protected accounts to manage access to the camera from the internet. So have a look at some of the online
law enforcement agencies.
Yeah, you could do.
Absolutely.
Now, look, the RRP is $230. I just bought one on eBay for about $67 US, so shop around. You'll get some much better prices on it. For more details, go to www.au.linksys.com.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
This is a rather clever Web 2.0 site for this week. A proxy server with a bit of a difference. www.walktoweb.com.
What's a proxy server? Nerd alert.
Walk to Web is Ruger. Walk, W-A-L-K, 2, the number 2, web.com. A proxy server is a server that sits between you and something else. It can be used to mask your internet address or to provide you with a gateway or an access point to the internet.
I know.
You can use it for a number of different reasons.
Yeah.
This is a very clever little device. It's almost like a social networking system. It allows you to view web pages visually and to map the connections between sites. So you can view sites, you can review sites, you can bookmark them, you can even vote for your favourite sites.
you type in a starting point, like I typed in techtalkradio.com.au, you click the walk button, and you'll see a page with a screenshot of the site and a number of levels of links from the site, and it calls them nodes. And then from each node, you can see where those nodes go. So the visual network lets you, it grows as you explore. Okay. There's web browser plugins for it if you're so inclined. There's even a developer's API, so it's a bit of fun. Website of the week, walktoweb.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Shoot. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Romanian radio and television stations do have a right to broadcast doom and gloom. The country's constitutional court has blocked a draft legislation which would have required Romanian radio and television to broadcast good and bad news in equal proportions. The proposal was ruled unconstitutional. Under the bill, broadcasters would have given equal time to positive and negative issues in their broadcasts. Its sponsors arguing that too much gloomy media was making people ill. But media and human rights watchdogs urged Romania's leaders to veto the legislation, saying it was unconstitutional to make a distinction between good news and bad news.
Have they seen The Current Affair?
Have they seen the ABC?
Have they seen Today Tonight?
Dodgy news. Don't know what they would make of some of those programs. But there you go.
We haven't had the old Anna Corrin this evening, have we?
The old Anna Corrin segue.
That's right.
Yes.
That's very good, Dr. Ron. Thank you very much. It's been wonderful having everybody in here this evening. We have learned a lot. And, yes, come back the same time next week in the same places, wherever you might be listening to us around the country, and we'll do it again. How long have you got here before you travel to the other side of the planet?
A couple of weeks, a few weeks.
Good.
Yeah. Good.
We'll have to get a ring in for you, JD. Absolutely. All right. You have been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Thank you very much, Adam, for coming
Thank
in
you.
This evening, too. Thanks it's been an absolute pleasure from traversing from the other side of the planet here to come over here.
I'll
Thanks
see
for
you
the
soon,
coffee,
Danger
too.
Mouse.
Whoa, okay, Whoa. Danger Mouse.
Yes, on the look out. Yeah. Okay, all right, same time next week. I think we'll go now. Bye now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron Hanlis, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.